Guten Morgen. Die großen Themen der Klassik für den Weg zur Arbeit mit Axel Brüggemann.
Heute ist Dienstag, der 8. Oktober. Einen wunderschönen guten Morgen. Und heute steht mal wieder eine Frau im Vordergrund unseres Podcasts. Und zwar Clara Schumann. Einen der erfolgreichsten Podcasts hier bei Backstage Classical haben wir gemacht mit dem Buch Clara von Christine Eichel. Was für eine Biografie war das, die Christine Eichel da vorgelegt hat, von eben dieser Klaviervirtuosin und Komponistin, die von ihrem Vater schon sehr früh ans Klavier gezwungen wurde, für die Musik, die eigentliche Sprache war statt ihrer Stimme für lange Zeit, die zerrissen war zwischen ihren Eltern, die sich scheiden lassen haben, zwischen ihrer Mutter und ihrem Vater, die später zerrissen war zwischen ihrem Vater und ihrem Ehemann Robert Schumann, der alles andere als ein idealer Ehemann war, besonders weil er auch ganz andere erotische Vorlieben hatte und zunächst als Komponist nicht so erfolgreich war wie seine Frau Clara als Pianistin. Die beiden haben ein Ehetagebuch geführt, in dem sie sich über die Freuden, aber auch über die Leiden ihrer Ehe ausgetauscht haben. Ja, und dann ist danach die Geschichte natürlich mit Johannes Brahms, dem Verehrer von Clara Schumann. Was genau da war, wissen wir nicht, aber es war auf jeden Fall so etwas wie Liebe. Christine Eichel hat diese Biografie erzählt als die Biografie einer modernen Frau, der es gegen alle Widerstände gelingt, Beruf und eigenes Leben irgendwie zusammenzubringen und für die, ja, die Musik eben auch das tatsächliche Ausdrucksmittel bleibt. Am Freitag nun hat am Opernhaus in Zürich ein Ballett Premiere und es trägt den Titel Clara. Choreografiert und inszeniert hat es Kathy Marston. Und die ist bekannt für ihre Ballette, die sich um starke Frauen drehen. The Cellist zum Beispiel erzählte die Geschichte von Jacqueline Dupré, der Cellistin. Jetzt also steht Clara auf dem Programm. Die Musik zu diesem Ballett stammt unter anderem von, klar, Clara Schumann, von Robert Schumann und von Johannes Brahms. Und neben der Philharmonia Zürich spielt auch die Pianistin Ragna Schirmer. Und heute Morgen bei Guten Morgen von Backstage Classical möchte ich jetzt mit Kathy Marston darüber sprechen, wie sie ihre Clara in Zürich in Szene setzen wird. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning.
Clara, what a life you are going to face now. What is so interesting about this person, Clara Schumann, for you?
The interest really came for me over 20 years ago when I read a Sunday review in a newspaper, a British newspaper, about a new biography. It was a sort of novel biography by a Scottish writer called Janice Galloway.
Okay.
And it was called Clara. And I don't actually remember what sounded interesting, but I bought the book and was immediately drawn in. I think... You know, she was new for me as a person. I'm not German. I didn't grow up with a picture of her on banknotes or anything like that. So I really opened the book with a fresh mind. And the character that I remember encountering was this young girl. I believe she must have been about 4 or 5 in the first chapter, mm-hmm. who didn't speak mm-hmm. and whose language was music.
Yes.
And the book was really beautiful because it was written, you know how normal novels have a lot of words on the page.
Right.
And this particular book gave space to the words.
Okay.
So it almost choreographed the words on the page in a poetic way. And that's something that I'm always looking for when I search for stories that feel right to tell in dance for me. I'm searching for characters and a narrative in which there's space between the words and lines. I felt that with Clara.
It's so interesting because there are so many different views on Clara. I don't know, there was just a new biography which appeared in Germany by Christine Eichel. And normally we see this suffering woman, as you said, this small girl not talking, playing piano, just getting love by playing piano from her father, later on from her husband, then from Johannes Brahms. And this new biography by Christine Eichel, which she as well talked about in this podcast, says she was very modern. She was a very strong woman. She was a working woman. She was doing her music. She was the successful one in the couple. How do you see that? Is Clara a modern woman or is she a victim?
Oh, gosh, she's not a victim. Not at all.
Good.
And it's funny. It's funny that you say that she was this poor girl who didn't speak because, you know, I am a person in which my language is not vocal and I don't see it as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It drew me into her, but it didn't in any way make me feel, oh, poor Clara not speaking. It almost gave her more of an interesting strength that she didn't need to speak because she had her other language in which she was very proficient and became, you know, amazing, you know, outstanding. And no, I mean, of course, throughout her life, as throughout all of our lives, there are challenges. And I think I've heard, you know, both sides of the story. You could see Clara and Robert's marriage as the dream couple, the the perfect romantic partnership and so on. At the same time, you could see the marriage as a disaster. And I don't really want to put either of those labels on. It was. They were married and they went through day by day challenges together. And
everybody who is married actually does, doesn't
it? Everybody does that. Yeah. Married or not.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. The whole life is a challenge, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't want to push to a headline of either way. I think what's interesting to me is the ambiguity. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I gave a talk about it here at the Open House in Zurich, and the interviewer asked me how much truth is there in the ballet? How faithful are we to biographical detail? Mm-hmm. And I think truth is a really interesting question because we all live many truths at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I can say, you know, right now I am being Kathy the artist. I'm creating a work. It's about to premiere. At the same time, I am also a wife. I am also a mother. I am also a businesswoman. I'm trying to juggle the aspects of also being a director of Ballet Zurich. There are many truths. And you sit, the fact is that right now I'm sat in my office talking to you. But how I feel about that, there is a little part of me that is thinking of my kids and where they are. There's a little part of me is thinking of which is the what's the improvement that I'm going to make to the ballet today. There are many things that we are at the same time. And that was one of the important things to me in considering how would I tell her story, was to really find a way to capture this multiplicity of the woman. Who is she in all of her or many of her different facets?
Before we come to this, how, I would be interested because you said you know this experience that your language is not art, but your language is dance, your language is the body. We are living in a world, this is more and more hooked to reality, to what we call reality, to words. We see talk shows, we see politicians on stage talking. And it seems to be that language and words promise us knowledge. Is it more and more difficult to rely and to trust in arts as a way of expression and as a way of finding another truth, which perhaps is even more important than what we call reality?
I think we are living in a world of talk shows and reality in inverted commas. However, yeah. I also think we're living in a world of post-truth where what people say is absolutely not to be trusted. So I think it's a time when I feel even more confident in residing in the truth of the body and the multiple truths that you can find in your body. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I love about telling something in dance is even with only one dancer, and usually I have more than one dancer on stage, but even within one body, you can express a desire with your arms to move in one direction and yet a pull to move with your legs in the other. Mm-hmm. Or you can express longing with your head or your shoulders, and you can express anxiousness with your feet at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I think words tend to, and I don't discount poetry because there are people that are able to capture more than one thing at the same time. It is.
Yes.
But I think in the sort of words that you're talking about, the headline talk show words, it's one thing, it's reductive, and it's often not the truth. It's manipulative and strategic. And in all of that noise that we have around us, I feel ever more confident that the language I want to express, the way I see the world, is dance and music.
Are you afraid that we lose the language of arts towards the language of words and the rhetorics of politics, for example?
No,
because it's there forever and it is in us. It's a truth which is in us, which everybody understands right away anyhow.
I mean, people, of course, you know, you choose to go into a theater, you choose to go into a concert hall. But I think dance actually exists in society and community way beyond the theater. My dance exists in the theater, but as a language, dance exists all over the world in many different contexts. And I think is understood internationally way more than the spoken word, because it does leap over the spoken word in particular language, spoken languages. So no, I'm not worried about dance into the future. I think it's a growing way of communication rather than one that's receding.
Especially if they're interesting topics, as Clara. Tell us a little bit. You have told us already you are interested in the ambiguity of Clara, in this person who has multiple faces and multiple facets of her life. Once in her relation to men, from her father to her husband to her lover, Brahms, whatever. And on the other hand, as you said as well, as an artist and as an entrepreneur, because she was very successful as well. How are you going to show that on stage?
Yeah. Often when I'm conceiving a ballet, I'll be looking for how can I graphically explain this to myself. Mm-hmm. So I see triangles in Clara's life. There's the triangle, as you said, between her father and Robert. Mm-hmm. There's later the triangle, well, actually first between her father and her mother.
Yes.
Then between her father, Robert, and Clara, and then later between Brahms, Robert, and Clara. So there's three really important triangles within the part of the story that I am focusing on, because I have to say I finish more or less after the time Brahms leaves mm-hmm. her mm-hmm. And she lived for another 40 years.
Yes.
So I want to make that point and do make that point in the final scene. But beyond that, I wanted to find a way of expressing the woman in all of these different guises and the fact that I feel she is the music she played, and the music that she played is all of those facets of her. We didn't hear her, so it's a leap of imagination. But from what I read and from the echo that she still enjoys, she must have been an incredible player. Mm-hmm. And I believe that all of the different experiences and challenges that she lived through fed into that ability to express herself through music. So how do I do that? I need to find a way to express the piano and she being one. Mm-hmm. And I decided to make her seven.
Okay.
So there are seven keys in an octave, seven white notes in an octave, let's say. And those, if you think of them as keys of a character or tones of a character, let's divide her personality into seven. And that's not to reduce it to seven. There could be many more.
Yes.
But in this ballet, she is the daughter or the protege. Mm-hmm. She is the artist. Mm-hmm. She's the wife. Mm-hmm. She's a mother. She's a nurse as she cares for Schumann. Mm-hmm. And she is what I like to describe as the muse. I think for many people, but particularly for Brahms, she was a muse, and a muse is on a pedestal, out of reach, unattainable. And I think that was one of the things that, that I'm focusing on their relationships, that there was a love, whether it was lived in a physical, sexual way, who knows. But to be honest, that's not my interest, really. I believe that the love they had was real.
It's like with language, love is nothing concrete, you know.
No, it is not. It is not concrete. Were they together? Who knows? What makes you together with someone? You know, because you share a bed or because you share an unspoken emotion.
But again, it's a question of buddy or not buddy. This is interesting because love without buddy is possible as well. Funny enough,
absolutely.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So that's the joy of dance is that we don't. It's not a film. We don't need to decide. Are we showing a scene in which they get out of bed together? We're showing a scene or several scenes in which there is an unquestionable connection, but it could be one. It was one that I believe was for Brahms existed because it was unattainable. It was impossible. And I mean, I think many of us know the strength of an impossible love is quite strong.
Oh yeah. and
we of
talk
course,
about
when
toxic today, don't we? As well, somehow.
Well, toxic. I don't think it was toxic.
Her husband probably was toxic. Yeah.
Possibly, and not. It's another label I would argue against.
Okay.
The sort of sense of it, their marriage being a disaster or toxic. I those are very strong words.
Yeah.
And yes, maybe on certain days, and maybe not on others. The fact was that the music that they made together, let's say he wrote, she wrote, anyway that they inspired in one another is far from a disaster. And if the point of a marriage is to have a nice cup of tea together at the end of the day, okay, that's nice. If the point of a marriage is to create art that lives through centuries, I'd say that's not a disaster.
Okay, yeah, I got the message. But Kathy, if you talk about explaining the life of Clara with the notes on the piano, how important is the music in this ballet? I understand Ragnar Schirmer is playing the piano in the show. Probably she plays a role in your choreography as well, doesn't she?
She doesn't exist on stage, and we did think about that, and it was one of my initial ideas. But the technicalities of her performing with the orchestra, being in proximity to the other players, the conductor, and so on, it seemed in the end the answer was that she needed to be with the orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the role that she plays is absolutely crucial because the music is the story. It's not a background. It's not even in the case of Swan Lake, the partner in telling the story, it simply is the story. And a lot of the music that we have incorporated into the score has got hidden codes embedded in it. You know, the variation from Bunteblätter that Clara wrote a series of variations on, later Brahms wrote a series of variations on, all of that is embedded into the piece. And if you don't understand it, you won't understand that from quite watching it, but it's there. And the last movement, for example, Brahms's piano concerto, the Adagio movement, he dedicated this particular movement to Clara, as he called it, a tender, loving portrait of Clara.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel it. It's their voice telling us this story for me. I listen to that music and I hear the feelings that he had for Clara in all of their complexity and beauty.
Okay, the music is the story. We understand that. The body, the language of the body is the story. If we see Clara and we remember that one of your last choreographies was about Jacqueline Dupré, do you see any parallels in these
absolutely.
Two women?
Yeah, absolutely. I've deliberately... it's a sister piece to the cellist. Of course, the cellist was a different experience because Jacqueline Dupré... lived, her life was within living memory. So when I was researching that work, I talked to people who knew her, were her friends, were her husband. I talked to Daniel Barenboim, for example. With Clara Schumann, of course, that's not possible. And we don't have really much to go on, or very limited visual materials and no audio material. So it's a leap of imagination in a different way. I have to admit, with creating the cellist, I felt heavier, the responsibility of telling someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
I feel it also with Clara, and I think there's something very special in creating and retelling the story of a real person rather than Odette Odile or Aurora or any of the Baltic heroines that we have. But of course, it's different the further away you are in history. It's a different thing. But they are two women who lived for music, who embodied music. Mm-hmm. Music lived through them, and the echo of that resounds today. So those are fundamental parallels. They're also, in my opinion, very strong women, multifaceted women, dedicated. They both sacrificed much of their life to their art and understood the pain and joy that living with art means. So yes, there are many parallels, but they're also very different. And I think the end of The Cellist is heartbreaking because, of course, Jacqueline Dupre's talent was cut short way too soon.
By cancer.
And by multiple sclerosis.
Sorry.
I didn't want it to be a tragic story, and I wanted the end of The Cellist to echo with a celebration in a way of the fact that such talent exists, even for a short time. The end of Clara is different because I am finishing the story at the point when Robert has died, Brahms and she have decided to part ways, at least in terms of living together, being together in the way that we talk about that. And I didn't want her to feel like the victim you mentioned. Yeah. I don't see her as a victim. I see her as a very powerful and by that point very mature, experienced and multi-layered person who continued to play and play and play. Yes. And support her children and have a career which she organized, she shaped, and quite honestly, who shaped her own story. Mm-hmm. She, the information that we have about her and those around her, Robert, Brahms, and so on, is very curated. Mm-hmm. You know, she decided the way she wanted to be remembered. And whatever lens we look through now, me or other writers that write biographies on her, we're projecting the story we want to tell,
of course,
on the material that she left us. And that's a really strong thing to do.
And
you know, that's
always
powerful.
Project yourself as well, isn't it? If you talk about your work and if you talk about her life as a life of pain and joy, how is it being an artist, having an expression which is different than perhaps the expression of other people? Do you consider your life as well as a life between pain and joy?
Yes, but I wouldn't say that's because other people don't. I think everybody, we all want to express ourselves, and it can be painful to anybody if they are not able to do that in whatever way they want to do it, words or sport or anything. People find their outlets and their ways to connect to others. Mm-hmm. And an inability to do that is painful. And the experience of succeeding in connecting to others and expressing yourself clearly is incredibly rewarding and warm for me. And my way of doing that is choreographing. And I have experiences regularly, daily, where the high is incredible. You know, it's like, I don't know, it's a drug or something. You want more and more because connecting to others, like-minded people in the studio and telling a story together that you all believe in and feeling all the feels is just a really incredible experience. But of course comes a lot of self-doubt and judgment and criticism from others that you have to deal with and being misunderstood because however you express yourself, not everybody is going to understand in whatever means. And so there's many ups and downs that you live with. That's life.
Everybody can write its own experience in the choreography you are presenting, and this they can do on the 11th of October in Zurich. And we are very much looking forward for seeing Clara, and wish you all the best for this premiere. Thank you very much, Kathy, for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Die Choreografin Kathy Marston am Freitag, dem 11. Oktober um 19 Uhr ist Premiere in der Oper in Zürich von ihrem neuen Ballett Clara. Ja, und wenn ihr mehr wissen wollt über das Leben von Clara, ich habe schon gesagt, eine neue Biografie ist gerade erschienen von Christine Eichel. Auch sie war zu Gast bei uns im Guten Morgen Podcast von Backstage Classical. Ich stelle euch den Link einfach unten in die Shownotes. Ich denke, ihr habt allerhand zu diskutieren. Für heute teilt den Podcast, debattiert ihn mit euren Freundinnen und Freunden, denn man kann ihn natürlich auch auf dem Weg von der Arbeit nach Hause hören. Tägliche News aus der Welt der klassischen Musik gibt es bei uns bei Backstage Classical. Ich freue mich aufs nächste Mal und sage jetzt erst einmal Tschüss, haltet die Ohren steif, euer Axel.